We live in a world where, you can order a 70-inch television at 11 o'clock at night, and it's just sitting on your front porch by sunrise.
Right, the logistics of it are just crazy.
Exactly. We have these algorithms designed to predict, like, exactly what we want to buy before we even consciously know we want it.
Oh, yeah, it's almost creepy.
It really is. And we've got 24/7 supermarkets, right, lit up like sports stadiums in the middle of the night.
Yeah, stacked high with out of season produce flown in from halfway across the globe.
Exactly. We have basically engineered our entire modern existence around this one idea, the idea that we should never, ever have to wait.
Right. Instant gratification.
Yes. And more importantly, we should never have to wonder if our basic physical needs will be met tomorrow. So, keeping all of that obsolete insulation in mind, it begs a huge question.
Which is.
Why does the most famous prayer in human history ask for something as primitive, as fragile, and as short-term as daily bread?
Yeah, it creates a massive cognitive dissonance for the modern mind, doesn't it?
Totally.
I mean, we have built endless layers of convenience. We have predictive supply chains, automated subscriptions, all to distance ourselves from raw physical
We want
vulnerability.
to be untouchable.
Exactly. So reciting a plea for just enough sustenance to get through the next 24 hours, it just feels completely disconnected from our reality.
It really does. Well, welcome, beloved family members, to our in-depth exploration today.
Okay, let's unpack this because we are looking at a truly profound sermon today.
It is incredibly profound.
It really completely re-examines this seemingly archaic line from the Lord's Prayer, right? Give us this day our daily bread. It is a phrase so deeply embedded in our cultural memory that it has become almost invisible.
Yeah, it's just a rhythm of syllables people recite without even thinking about what they're saying.
Exactly. But the insight from the sermon we're exploring today reveals that this isn't just like quaint, old-fashioned poetry.
Far from it. It is a radical survival-level confession of faith. And ironically enough, this ancient request might actually be the exact cure for our deeply modern epidemics. Things like anxiety, greed, and isolation.
Spot on. And to really grasp the gravity of that request, you have to look at the architectural brilliance of the prayer itself.
What do you mean by the architecture?
Well, prayer is essentially the highest, most noble language humans possess, right? It is the language of communicating with the divine. And this specific model, the one provided by Jesus, operates on this fascinating pivot.
Okay, I'm tracking.
It opens on a scale of absolute cosmic grandeur. You have these huge petitions for God's name to be hallowed, for a massive internal kingdom to arrive.
Right, for the divine will to be executed on earth exactly as it is in the perfection of heaven.
Exactly. These are universe-shifting, massive theological concepts.
So you're basically staring into the infinite cosmos,
Yes.
and then without any warning or like any transition at all, the camera just pans straight down into the dirt.
It's a sudden drop.
It goes from the eternal kingdom of heaven straight down to the mud and the sweat of human hunger. It connects the absolute grand sovereignty of the universe to the rumbling of a human stomach.
Which is incredibly jarring, but it's deeply intentional. And to understand the weight of that drop into the dirt, we really have to look closely at the language being used.
Right, the original language.
Yeah, the specific Greek word recorded for daily in this context is epiosios, and it is an absolute linguistic anomaly.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, it appears nowhere else in ancient Greek literature outside of this specific prayer. Scholars and linguists have debated its exact nuance for centuries.
Oh, wow. So it's not just a casual word for like today's lunch.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It translates roughly to, well, for the coming day, or in some deeper theological interpretations, super substantial.
Super substantial. That's a heavy word.
It is. It carries the weight of a desperate, urgent plea. It's asking for what is fundamentally biologically necessary for tomorrow's survival.
Because things were so precarious back then.
Exactly. You have to put yourself in the historical context of a harsh, post-Eden agricultural society. Humanity back then was literally sweating for every single calorie.
There were definitely no global supply chains to import grain if your local harvest failed, right?
Zero. One unexpected storm, a slight shift in rainfall, maybe a swarm of pests, and all your careful planning was utterly destroyed.
The margin of error was practically non-existent.
Exactly. The immediate result of a crop failure wasn't just, some economic hardship. It was famine. It was death.
Man, that historical vulnerability completely reframes the request. I know for myself, and probably for many of our beloved family members joining us today, we treat survival like a utility.
We really do.
Like, we expect the lights to turn on when we flip the switch. We expect clean water to flow out of the tap indefinitely. We are totally insulated from how fragile the human body actually is.
We've lost touch with our own biology, in a way.
We have. But I do want to push back on something here because it highlights a major tension that the sermon brings up.
Okay, go for it.
For centuries, religious traditions, and this includes large factions of historical Christianity, they've leaned heavily into asceticism.
Yes, the denial of the physical.
Right. We get this ingrained cultural message that the physical body is a distraction. You know, monks lived in caves and starved themselves because the flesh was viewed as inferior.
Quite even sinful, yeah.
Exactly. Sinful compared to the elevated, holy spiritual realm. So if the body is just this temporary, flawed vessel, why spend our most powerful divine language asking for something as mundane as physical bread?
That is a brilliant tension to highlight, and it goes right to the core of the sermon's initial argument.
I'm glad I brought it up then.
You should be, because there has historically been a strong impulse to undervalue the physical world. But the inclusion of this request fundamentally rejects that divide.
It bridges the gap.
Right. By placing physical sustenance directly in the center of the ultimate model for human prayer, Jesus is actively validating our physical needs.
It's essentially saying matter matters.
Precisely. Matter matters. The creator of the physical world actually cares about the physical sustenance of his creatures.
That's a comforting thought.
It is. There is that famous verse, right? Man shall not live by bread alone. And people constantly misinterpret it.
How so? Like, they think it means we shouldn't care about food.
Exactly. They read it as a dismissal, as if it means, don't worry about bread, just focus on spiritual things.
But that's not what it says.
No. Logically, to say not by bread alone absolutely presupposes that bread is still fundamentally necessary.
Oh, that's such a good point.
It proves that God does not ignore our bodily reality. Asking for physical provision is completely legitimate.
It validates the reality of the human condition.
Yes, and it removes the religious guilt associated with simply having physical needs.
It acknowledges that we are biological creatures who get hungry and that our hunger is seen and cared for. I love that baseline validation.
It's a very grounded theology.
It is. But if we establish that asking for physical provision is a good and holy thing, it naturally leads me to a massive follow-up question.
Let's hear it.
Why only daily? I mean, if we're communicating with the ultimate provider, a being with infinite cosmic resources, why are we asking for a 24-hour drip feed?
It does seem inefficient, right?
Yeah. Why not pray for a lifetime supply? Why not pray for a guaranteed 5-year plan, a robust stock portfolio, and complete financial independence?
So we never have to experience the anxiety of needing something tomorrow.
Exactly. I mean, if we look back at the historical narratives in the sermon, this structure of provision isn't actually new.
No, it has deep roots.
It reminds me entirely of the Israelites wandering in the wilderness after leaving Egypt. They are in a barren desert, completely incapable of agricultural planning.
Right, they had nothing.
And they are miraculously provided with this bread-like substance, manna, falling from the sky every single morning. But the catch was the strict regulation around it.
They were only allowed to gather enough for that specific day.
Yes. What is fascinated here, or rather, what's so strange to our modern minds, is why they couldn't just stock up.
Well, what's fascinating here is that this sermon draws upon this exact historical parallel to explain the psychology of the daily request.
Okay, walk me through that.
The manna principle was a highly regulated system of dependence. If an Israelite, driven by perfectly natural human anxiety or greed, decided to gather extra manna,
Just to build up a little safety net for the next week.
right, just in case, well, it bred worms and rotted overnight. It was entirely useless by the next morning.
That is so gross, but so intentional. The system was basically rigged against hoarding, which, from a modern financial perspective, sounds absolutely terrifying.
It goes against everything we're taught.
Right. We are taught to always build a safety net, diversify your portfolio, plan for retirement.
We are. But we have to look at the primary goal of the system outlined in the sermon. The fundamental identity of God established at the very beginning of this prayer is our Father. And a father's most basic, primal role is feeding his children. The daily limitation isn't about God being stingy with
Then
resources.
have a budget cut.
Exactly. It is a mechanism to ensure a continuous, unbroken relationship.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Think about it. If God provided a 10-year supply of manna on day one, the Israelites would have built massive warehouses, locked the doors, and by day three, they would have completely forgotten their dependence on the provider.
That makes total sense. It's like, it's the difference between giving a child a daily allowance and giving an 18-year-old a $10 million trust fund.
That is a perfect analogy.
If you hand over the massive trust fund, the transaction is completely finalized. The child has total independence, and they might never call home again because they simply don't need to.
They're set for life.
Right. But a daily allowance guarantees that the child still has to come to the kitchen table, look their parent in the eye, and have a genuine interaction every single day.
Yes. The dailiness is the exact mechanism that prevents isolation. It keeps the relationship alive.
And it forces a daily acknowledgement of our actual reality, right? That we are not truly self-sufficient.
Exactly. You aren't trusting in the massive stockpiles sitting in your warehouse. You are placing your trust in the character of the provider to consistently show up again tomorrow.
Which brings us to the psychological impact of all this. Because, beloved family members, we are currently living in that metaphorical warehouse.
We absolutely are.
The sheer volume of calories, comfort, and material goods available to the average person today is unprecedented in human history.
It's staggering.
Yet we are looking at a society that is arguably more anxious, more stressed, and more deeply dissatisfied than ever before.
This is where the ancient sermon diagnoses our modern pathology perfectly.
How so?
In an era of immense abundance, genuine gratitude has plummeted. And we have to ask why that happens.
Yeah. Why are we so unhappy when we have so much?
Psychologically, gratitude requires a contrast. It requires a gap between desire and fulfillment. But we have engineered a society where that gap is razor thin.
Oh, because everything is instantaneous.
Exactly. We no longer have to anticipate. We no longer have to wait for a harvest. Mm-hmm. And we rarely have to delay gratification.
We've completely lost the joy of the hard-earned treat.
We really have.
I think about how people used to view a special meal out. Decades ago, going to a nice restaurant was a major event, right?
Oh, it was a huge deal. People dressed up.
Yes. It was anticipated for weeks, it was savored, and it generated a massive amount of gratitude simply because it was a stark break from the everyday norm.
The contrast was clear.
Right. Now, if I have a craving on a random Tuesday, I just tap my phone and the food magically appears at my door in 30 minutes.
And when extreme abundance becomes the baseline expectation, anything less feels like a deprivation.
Wow. Anything less is a deprivation.
Yeah. The brain's dopamine response just flatlines because there is no contrast left. If we don't instantly achieve and satisfy every single desire, we plunge into frustration and even depression.
We are just running on this hedonic treadmill where enough is never actually enough.
That is why adopting a daily bread mindset is the ultimate training regimen against modern greed and vanity.
It forces a complete mental reset.
It does. When you consciously pray for just enough for today, you are forcing your brain to clearly distinguish between what your physical body actually needs to survive right now and what your unchecked, anxious ego wants to stockpile for the next decade.
It strips away the entitlement.
Completely.
It allows you to look at a simple meal and recognize it as a miracle worth celebrating rather than just, you know, the bare minimum of what you feel you are owed.
It acts as a psychological shield. The moment we feel we are entitled to a 5-year guarantee of prosperity, we stop being grateful for today's provision.
We take it all for granted.
Exactly. Acknowledging daily dependence protects the soul from this toxic cultural narrative that constantly whispers, you're falling behind, you need more to be safe.
Okay, I love that. But if the manna principle strictly teaches us that hoarding rots the soul and that we should only ask for today's provision.
Right, the daily limitation.
How do we reconcile that with the reality that many of us do have a surplus?
That's a very practical question.
Right, because we aren't going out and gathering food daily anymore. We have refrigerators, we have savings accounts, we have investments. Does having a surplus mean we are inherently violating this principle?
That is the exact transition the sermon addresses by focusing heavily on the pronouns used in the prayer.
The pronouns?
Yes. Notice the specific language. It does not say, give me my daily bread. It explicitly says, give us this day our daily bread.
Give us. Wow, I never really thought about that.
The inclusion of that single word completely redefines the concept of personal ownership. It pulls the entire community into the picture.
It refuses to let us stay isolated in our own little bubbles of personal enlightenment, doesn't it?
Exactly. Mm. The faith described here is inherently communal. When you pray for us, you are taking on a shared collective responsibility.
Okay, so applying that to the surplus question.
Right, so to answer your question, If you are praying for daily bread for the community, and you look at your own life and realize you have been given far more than you need for today.
Which many of us have.
Exactly. If you are holding a massive abundance while others in your community are experiencing a deficit, what is the logical conclusion?
Well, the modern individualistic instinct is to think, wow, I am highly favored. I should upgrade my lifestyle, buy a bigger house, and increase my personal security.
But the communal mandate flips that entirely. In a world characterized by staggering economic inequality, a personal surplus is not a divine signal to build bigger barns and hoard wealth.
What is it then?
It's a direct mandate to share. If you have been given more than your daily bread, you have effectively been drafted as the delivery mechanism for someone else's daily bread.
Oh man, you essentially become the conduit for someone else's answered prayer.
Yes.
That is a heavy, beautiful responsibility. It means that surplus wealth isn't actually yours to keep. It's just temporarily stationed in your bank account until you distribute it.
The sermon emphasizes that this voluntary giving is the exact mechanism that turns mere material wealth into genuine discipleship.
Putting your money where your faith is.
Literally. When you freely share your surplus, you are loudly declaring that your ultimate trust is in the provider, not in the fortress of your savings account.
You are actively participating in the ecosystem of trust.
Exactly. And dismantling the systems of hoarding that create scarcity in the first place.
It creates a living network of provision rather than these isolated silos of wealth. But as profound as that communal sharing is, there is one final incredibly deep layer to this exploration that the sermon points out.
Right. There is, and it pushes beyond just physical food and economics.
Yeah, it addresses the ultimate crisis of meaning in the modern world. We have just discussed how to handle physical abundance and physical surplus.
The material side of things.
Right, but we have to look at the undeniable reality around us. In an age where physical famine is incredibly rare for the majority of the developed world, we are witnessing a massive, paralyzing epidemic of psychological and spiritual depression.
It's the great paradox of our time.
It really is. Why are so many people who have full pantries, secure jobs, and comfortable, climate-controlled homes completely miserable?
Because we are treating ourselves like we are nothing more than biological machines.
Exactly. We think if we just put premium fuel in the tank, the machine should be happy.
But humans are far more complex than biological entities. The sermon states very clearly that while our physical bodies might be completely saturated with calories and comforts, our souls are often left starving and completely neglected.
We feed the body, but starve the soul.
Yes. We have mastered the art of keeping the biological machine running. But just as the physical body requires physical bread to function, the spiritual self requires an entirely different kind of nourishment.
We need spiritual bread.
Exactly.
The physical bread keeps our biological cells dividing. You know, it keeps the heart beating and the lungs expanding. But the spiritual bread is what gives us the actual reason to want to take the next breath.
It provides the ultimate purpose.
That synthesis captures the core of the message perfectly. If your soul is starting for meaning, a full pantry is completely useless.
It won't fix the emptiness.
Right. You can acquire all the wealth, experience all the comfort, and indulge in all the instant gratification that modern society has to offer. But without spiritual purpose, without a deep, abiding connection to the ultimate source of reality, you will just experience a profound, hollow emptiness.
Because you are fundamentally hungry for something a supermarket cannot sell.
Wow. Yeah, you can't buy that on a shelf.
Precisely. The prayer for daily bread is ultimately a holistic plea for total sustenance, both body and soul.
It covers everything.
It is asking the divine to sustain our physical lives today and simultaneously to provide the spiritual vitality required to understand why we are alive today.
When you pull all of these incredible layers together for our beloved family members joining us, the sheer weight of this ancient phrase becomes undeniable.
It's so much more than a few old words.
It really is. Asking for daily bread is not reciting a mundane grocery list to the sky. It is a profound, universe-shifting declaration of reality.
It is declaring that God is the absolute source of all supply.
Yes. It is a direct act of rebellion against the modern anxiety that screams at us to control and manipulate tomorrow.
And a rebellion against the greed that insists we need 1,000 times more than we could ever use.
Exactly. And it is a rebellion against the isolation that tells us we only need to care about our own personal security.
It systematically strips away every illusion of control we try to build.
Which is terrifying at first.
It is. But in doing so, it grants an incredible, counterintuitive sense of peace. When you truly internalize that the universe is intimately concerned with your physical and spiritual survival today, the crushing burden of securing your own existence is lifted.
You can finally breathe.
Yes. You are free to simply live in the present, to be wildly grateful for what you have right now, and to generously share your surplus with the community around you.
It is the ultimate cure for the exhausting modern treadmill we're all running on.
It really is.
Beloved family members, as we wrap up our in-depth exploration of this incredibly rich sermon today, I want to leave you with one final lingering thought to mull over as you go about your week.
A little homework.
Exactly. A little something to reflect on. We've talked extensively today about the immense weight of the five-year plan and how our culture demands that we have our entire future secured, insured, and mapped out perfectly.
The pressure is constant.
It is. But think about the radical, almost reckless trust required to genuinely pray this prayer. If you truly, deeply adopted this daily bread mindset, if you started treating every single day's provision, the food on your table, the breath in your lungs, the energy to do your work, as a direct, fresh, and intentional gift, rather than a baseline expectation of something you are owed.
If you really shifted that perspective.
Right. What specific heavy anxiety about your five-year plan could you completely let go of tonight?
That is a question that challenges the very foundation of how we operate our lives.
Oh, it really does. It demands a totally different way of seeing the world. Thank you, beloved family members, for joining us on this in-depth exploration today. It has been an absolute joy to unpack these ideas with you. Stay curious, stay deeply rooted in your communities, and may you find yourself fully nourished this week, both in body and in soul. Take care of yourselves, and we will talk to you next time.